Hello and welcome to the Energy Talk podcast. My name is Olubunmi Olajide and thank you so much for joining us again on another episode of our Campfire series. On this episode, we're talking with a group of graduate students from the University of Michigan, and they actually won a competition recently called Reimagining Nuclear Waste. And this is a very interesting conversation because, as you know, the Campfire series is where we talk to young people who are doing projects in the energy industry. But there's just this interesting thing about the dynamics of their team and how their project combines technology with policy, which I think are two very key things in the energy conversation. So throughout this conversation, you hear about how team dynamics has a role to play and about how applying technology and understanding policy and the restrictions around policy are very important in order to make your ideas go from just ideas to applying in the real world. And also we get to talk about nuclear, which is always exciting for me. So yeah, let's jump in with introductions and learn about what their project was.
So I'm Ankit and I'm from India, and I did my bachelor's in civil engineering from India 2017, and then I joined a school for volunteering teaching work, and then I shifted to my civil engineering work doing evaluation of properties. I didn't quite like that job, so I thought that maybe I can be more than a civil engineer. So I thought to join a sustainability program in the School for Environment and Sustainability in UMass. So yeah, now I'm a second year master's student studying sustainability. Sustainable energy system in School for Environment and Sustainability.
I can go next, and then Lu Yao and Jacob, that's how you're appearing on my screen, so maybe you guys can follow in that order. But I'm Anya Shapiro. I am also a graduate student at the School for Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan. I'm also getting my MBA at the Ross School of Business. And my big focus and my passion is the circular economy. Previously, I worked in federal environmental policy, basically serving as a mediator, so bringing together all the different people that are involved in passing environmental policy and getting them to see eye to eye on controversial issues. So that was really interesting, and I sort of had my big exposure to energy and renewable energy then. And I came back to school to meet interesting, passionate people like my teammates, and I'm really passionate about the future of nuclear. I think it's a huge part of the decarbonization agenda. So we're very excited to talk to you about that today.
Cool. So my name's Lu Yao, you could call me Lulu for brief. I'm also a student at the School for Environment and Sustainability. I'm going to be a second year sustainable assistant track. My biggest interest is actually transportation, shared mobility and shared delivery, stuff like that. And I do believe that nuclear energy will provide us better like decarbonization society. I really hope that we could use a lot of nuclear in the future that will, because I study the environmental impacts on the transportation portion, and transportation is like contributing 30% ish on the overall energy consumption. So that's how I link to the energy part. And my undergrad is actually in environmental engineering. So some of our ideas about wastewater treatment, I might have a little more knowledge than my teammates on on that, on the professional terms.
Yeah, and I am the team's token nuclear engineer. Although actually my background before that is in chemical engineering, and in the future, actually, I'm starting at law school here at the University of Michigan in the fall. Oh, and my name's Jacob. I should say that as well. And I met the team through, I should say I'm passionate about all sorts of energy, not just nuclear. And as a result, I wanted to take kind of a breadth of energy classes, and I ended up in a energy and technology seminar with Lu Yao. And so we met around when our nuclear waste reimagining competition started.
I can take that. This is Anya. So basically, the short story of the long version is that this competition was sponsored by different energy companies and NGOs and folks within the nuclear engineering department at the University of Michigan. And the goal was to basically re-envision the future of nuclear waste. So the sponsors of this program basically are acknowledging that nuclear energy is a key part of ensuring that we can address climate change and mitigate it to the extent possible, but that there's still a lot of problems with public perception of nuclear energy. And that's because of the idea that nuclear waste is this ill in society and that it's just sitting there totally unused. So basically a bunch of different teams, both undergrad and graduate, came together and pitched different ideas. And some of them were really exciting. I think all of them should have won, honestly, but we were selected and we'll tell you about what happened after that. But the idea and the genesis is the idea that we need to think about a creative solution for utilizing nuclear waste. So I'll just be honest. I don't know if my teammates know this, but I did not start off being the biggest proponent of nuclear. My family is actually from Chernobyl originally. So I grew up, you know, conversations around the dinner table about the responsibility of energy and the different people that can be harmed if it goes wrong, if it's not managed correctly. So that was sort of the context that I grew up in. I also did a lot of research when I was in undergrad on the fact that in the United States, a lot of nuclear waste is actually stored on U.S. tribal territories. So Native Indians, they essentially are bearing the brunt of nuclear waste storage and they're suffering pretty extreme health consequences as a result. So I was kind of curious about, like, what can we do? I mean, nuclear waste is not going to go away. It's just going to keep accumulating. And what is like a good way to make use of it and try to minimize the harm that it creates for everyone. So was not always the biggest proponent, and I'm sort of coming around to the idea right now.
I have to just jump in here because I saw the faces of some of your teammates. I think they were surprised. So I'm curious how you went through the entire competition and this never came up.
Well, so I was going to mention our team has actually never met in person.
Really?
Because of coronavirus. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Anya. I had no idea about that. No idea about that. But yeah, but we've never met in person, so.
Yeah, I'll just say, like, part of the reason is that people react kind of weirdly to that. And I don't know. It's part of my background, right? Like, I didn't grow up in Chernobyl. I just kind of have that appreciation for that side of nuclear's history. And I feel like sometimes people think that, like, just because that's my family background, I should be super opposed. So I'm sparing with that information. But honestly, it's never really come up. So that's part of the reason.
Yeah. Me and Anakin might be the one that actually, like, met all the teammates in person. For me, one of the reasons that I want to be part of this competition is because during that energy seminar, that professor who is leading the seminar class, he is a chemical engineer, and in one Q&A session, he mentioned that he is not supporting nuclear because of the waste. Like, he just cannot think, like, how to deal with the nuclear waste. He might meant, like, the danger of it or how to, like, treat it. That answer kind of, like, triggered me, like, I want to know more about nuclear waste. And then this competition came up, and then I was like, oh, maybe this is a good chance for me to learn more about the nuclear waste. And then, like, so then I reached out to Jacob to see if he wants to be part of the team as well. And then after he confirmed, then I know that technology portion we are confirmed, then we can form a team for sure of our own. So that's how I got linked to it.
And of course, myself being a nuclear engineering student at the time, you know, I've always been a fan of certainly the technology of nuclear. And I like to get into and research all the different types of exciting new advanced reactors we might have on the horizon in a decade or so. But I also try to keep in my mind what's great about nuclear isn't purely just, you know, I shouldn't just be a proponent of nuclear for the fact that it's nuclear. I like nuclear energy because, you know, provides this great baseload source of energy And it can also be used in many different applications as well, but I try to keep that in mind. So there's a few things about nuclear waste that make it a challenge, of course. It's very expensive to store and very expensive to transport. We were trying to come up with ways that we could utilize this nuclear waste on kind of an economically feasible basis. So that's one challenge that we had to overcome. But generally speaking, I think nuclear waste itself is a resource. It's still fuel that can be used to produce energy. Of course, it's producing this decay heat, which is valuable. It has a price that we can attach to it. And the way we kind of phrased or kind of looked at the problem in our mind is, how could we take that waste and make it something valuable for even just the immediate community around that waste? Because of course the community has to bear the weight of storing that waste. So, you know, how much better would it be if it's not this burden on them, but in fact something which is helping them, you know, clean their wastewater in their community, or even some other applications which could be potential in the future for nuclear waste.
So our solution was basically using, as Jacob was saying, there's this heat that is generated from nuclear waste. So our solution basically harnesses that heat and uses it to treat sewage sludge. So it turns it into a profitable and sustainable biomass. In doing this process, basically the costs and the environmental impact of handling the actual sewage sludge is reduced significantly. And you're really putting that nuclear waste to work by using the heat that it generates just by sitting in the dry cask. So it's like, it's a circular solution. It sort of uses waste to create less waste.
This is a very practical solution. So was it a brainstorming session that kind of led to this aha moment, or was that something you guys always had at the back of your mind?
I can talk about that. We explored so many options for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, because initially our team, three of us first formed the team in November. And then we go to the workshops, we learn about the nuclear knowledge that the competition organizer was teaching us, and also teaching us the entrepreneurship's idea. Like they want us to provide a viable solution, right? And so we had a lot of brainstorming idea, and how we came down to our idea is actually deadlines. So this competition is really long. It's a 6 months competition. The team like officially formed is from in January. That you sign up as a team, but they have many stuff going on before that, and then they have a deadline in March saying you have to submit your first draft proposal and presentation. And at that time, me, Jacob, and Mariana, the teammate who's missing from this podcast right now, we spent a couple working sessions, came down to two ideas, which is using the to treat the wastewater sludge or the landfill leachate. And at that time, we actually submitted the landfill leachate as our proposal. But after we submitted, like, I don't know, a minute after, Mariana was like, guys, we think we should actually go for wastewater sludge. And then so for the last 1.5 months, we've been more working on the wastewater sludge. But the feedback we got from our first proposal helped to frame our solution better. So that's like, deadline is the breaking point for us to like come down to our idea. Otherwise, we might still be exploring more and more options, because there are so many like good ideas. And when we were viewing other teams' idea, we were like, "This is so cool! We could do that too." You know, like I think deadline is really important in this kind of thing. Like you need to have an end for your like brainstorming session. That's the insight for our team.
We were trying to focus on specifically environmental challenges or challenges that we could address with nuclear fuel because it produces this low-grade heat that we can utilize. So Aniket mentioned carbon capture. We could potentially use the heat from nuclear fuel to regenerate some of the materials used in carbon capture. And of course, what we ultimately went with was using the heat to treat wastewater sludge.
I'm also curious, obviously you picked the good idea of the bunch, but did you have any bad ideas along the way that you guys had to like eliminate off your list very quickly?
I wouldn't say they're bad ideas. They're just like, you know, they're limited. So like we also did a little presentation in January as well, or December, and we were proposing for using the spent fuel to heat the runway of the airport. We felt that's a good idea, and that's actually proposed by our former teammate. Like, he wasn't able to join our team because he had internship in DC. But we felt that would be good because it will eliminate a lot of costs on trying to shovel the ice and snow on the runway. It will have the constant heat, but there are other like dangerous issues, like what about the workers on the air, on the runway? How do you protect them? And also like regulation issues. Are you allowed to have those things on there? I don't know. And there were like other ideas, like can we put the new spent fuel on a car, on a vehicle, and then people would say like people wouldn't accept that. And we also had idea of like on the ship, like there are people doing it, but like it was ideas from like 30 years ago, and they already like suspended that as well. So there are many more ideas, but it's just like they always have some limitation that it's not achievable like in real life. So yeah, that's how we come down to like our final two and one.
Yeah, we're just saying, yeah, like with almost every idea, we have some regulatory hurdle or like public perceptions about that. Yeah, that's in the last lecture, we found this idea where there was like almost no regulatory hurdle, and like we were treating the waste of public, so it was like best.
So you must have heard a bit the team talk about policy. And since I mentioned a bit earlier about the team dynamics, with a lot of them being engineers, and Anya is the only one who is actually used to working with policy a lot, it was very interesting. So I asked them how it affected their project and how they dealt with the regulations, and especially around nuclear waste, because it's a very tight subject. So their answers were very interesting. So we're going to hear about them talk about how policy affected their project, and then we're going to them talking about the final month, what the final month of their project was like, and how they went through the end of the competition.
Yeah, and just in general, I mean, we're talking about like all these cool ideas we had. I think I can't speak for the full team, but it seemed like when it came down to it, like which idea are we going to pick, it was really important that it was as minimal policy regulatory burden as humanly possible. So really, like, there are only a couple major laws governing the space right now in terms of like dry casks, which is the type of nuclear waste we're talking about. And that has a lot to do with, you know, the maximum heat that needs to be maintained and the amount of times you need to inspect the dry casks a year. So our technology is the one that basically you wouldn't have to do anything really with the dry cask. Like, it basically would plug right into the existing infrastructure. And that was, if I'm reflecting on like why we were successful versus other teams, I think it was because the judges understood that the policy landscape is so gridlocked right now with nuclear waste and nuclear energy that the only real like creative solution that's going to work right now is the one that does not require any new laws to be passed. So that was sort of, I think, what set us apart in the end there.
And I don't know, because some of you might relate to this because some of you have engineering backgrounds, but policy isn't something that I came to appreciate personally until I got out of school. I started learning about, okay, there are so many good ideas to solve the energy transition, and there's so many ideas to probably stop or slow the rate of climate change. Why aren't we doing it? That's the question. And trying to answer that question, I was like, oh, there's this thing called policy, and oh, it's very complicated, and oh, people argue a lot, and nothing happens. So is this something, especially the ones on the team with engineering backgrounds, is this something you had to like learn about as well, or appreciate at least?
It's kind of like, I mean, although like I have an engineering background, but when I came in CIS, so like I got like a bit taste of, yeah, what you know, the value of policy is and all these things. So yeah, then I started understanding that, yeah, really the policy is really important. In engineering, I never even thought about this. I was all the time I was just going for the technology. And I never thought, yeah, I can face the policy hurdles or something. But yeah, when I came to CIS, then I took some classes regarding energy policies. That really helped in picking this idea, because I had then a little bit background in policy. Although sometimes my engineering background still overstayed this policy thing. So
I would add, you know, all of us are essentially graduate students. It's basically been, we've gotten to the level after we finished our bachelor's degree, and then we kind of realized, oh, we should kind of look into this policy thing. I personally think that we should have more curriculums throughout the country, engineering curriculum specifically, having it required to look at policy. At least nuclear engineering should have it required to look at policy more so, because that's so important.
Yeah, I had downside, or how do you describe it? That my mood wasn't so well, like towards the end of the competition, because I had decided, I was like thinking we could move that dry cast to like other places. And then like my teammates, Anya, Jacob and Maria, they were like, no, we cannot, because of regulation.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I was like, why not? It's like such a good idea. We could use it. Like, we can provide service to more wastewater treatment plan. And then they were like, no, you cannot do that, because regulations are not applicable. And yeah, so I had to like talk to NK. I was like, why?
Yeah, I remember that.
About it. And then finally I came across like around, and I was like, okay, I'll accept that fact. Yeah. That we cannot do it.
I can still remember that. Yeah, one night, like, yeah, we all finished the talk, and then me and Louis, we both were still on the call, and we were depressed, like, yeah, we cannot move this now. And we are not quite satisfied with our idea. We were like on the call for next 30 minutes not saying any word. We both were like kind of in our own world. That, yeah, we're not gonna go ahead with this. So we support, like, then Arnie and then Mariana and Jacob, they mentioned their point, and then we also understand that it's still like really difficult to move that right, guys.
Anya, I'm sure you don't really relate to the engineering perspective on policy, because I think you are more comfortable with the boundaries of regulation and how difficult it is to actually pass policy in any context at all.
Yes, but I'll say that as a policy person, I actually think there needs to be required classes for engineering and science, because I've dealt with so many people, passionate, you know, very smart people, that when it gets down to it, like, the science does not work out. No matter how much funding you throw it at, no matter how much people you can get to sign a signature saying, we think this idea is great. That's kind of why I came back to school, is to get that science-based knowledge on sustainability. But I do remember that phone call that Aniket was talking about, where I was like, you guys, this is not happening. We're not putting anything on a car. I'm going to drop out of this group if that's part of the solution. And I think we recovered really well, and we came up with an idea that can actually work. So I think it was all in good fun in the end.
We called a lot of people to have our idea validated. So we were like rushing in, calling like wastewater treatment plant managers, especially during coronavirus time. And then and Mariana was calling a lot of nuclear people as well, and scheduling interviews with our advisors, and then getting like feedbacks. And then Jacob was also doing calculations. We had additional teammates who did a model design, like CAD thing as well. And then I was formalizing those regulations portion, like checking. And NK also helped providing, like, because we narrowed down the wastewater treatment plant that's close by a nuclear power plant, so that we can like say that will actually work, because we are not eliminating the transportation cost. So we need to make sure that we are not adding the cost on the wastewater treatment plant as well. So we did a lot of calling and then writing our proposal, putting our presentations together, and also we had that short video of the CAD model as well. So I think that was the we were also having weekly meetings and to like keep track on finishing line.
Like, I think the team dynamics should not be underestimated here, because as we're all saying, like, we were busy graduate students. This was finals week. There was like so much going on, and on top of it was coronavirus. And I think there was something about this idea, and there's something about this team, even though we've never actually met in person, which is hilarious, but there was something keeping us moving. There were times I'm sure all of us were like, I don't know if this idea is going to win. I don't even think it's worth my time, but we all stayed committed, and I don't know what it was. I think it was different for every person, but it's a testament to the fact that passion can go so far. Like, even when everything else is falling apart, that's what I think kept us in this game. And I'm glad we stuck together, but it was hard as graduate students to be doing something extracurricular where you're not getting paid and you're not sure if you're going to, you know, win anything. So for other people that are listening to this and are graduate students and are dealing with the same thing, I think we all tell you to just keep going. It's all going to work out.
Yeah, now you are mentioning that. Oh my God. I remember like a week before our like presentation or like submission, I was complaining to a PhD friend. I was like, why did I sign up for this for myself? I was like, why am I doing this too? I remember my last month, I literally actually had a Excel sheet to record all my time. I was like, I need to spent so much time on this class, so much time on this. I was like recording all those, my 24/7. Like, that's my first time ever to actually record on like by myself. Like, because I feel like if I don't do that, I cannot get things done at all. And now I'm still having that file, but I'm not really using it anymore. So I don't know. I just feel like that 1 month is really crazy.
It was crazy. Yeah, I was just, I had talked to like other teams also, and I guess we were the only one who were meeting like almost every single week in like last 4 months or 5 months. So yeah, that really helped to keep us also accountable for our project and deadlines.
I was just going to mention, you know, we all had moments like that where it was super busy. And honestly, this is probably one of the best team dynamics I've ever had, you know, through all my classes, my graduate degree. Even though we've never met in person, I think we've been able to really work together as a team.
Hello again. This is Olu in Pulse Production, and I just had to jump in here because I had a really great time speaking with the team, and just hearing about how they went through their project and the team dynamics behind it and how they won out in the end. It was just an amazing time, and just editing this episode again, it's really great to revisit this. And we've heard a lot about the technicalities of their project, and now we just want to hear about what happened when they discovered they won and how that and what the future for this project is.
I can talk about it. So it was in your email, and I was actually having a class presentation at the time, and I just finished presenting. It's in the Q&A session for my class presentation, and I saw that email. I was like really happy, but I should not show it because I'm on Zoom at that point, because like I should not show that. But I'm like super happy. I was like also surprised as well. And Anya is in that same class, and she literally like texted me like on Zoom privately saying like, OMG. And that's it. And I knew what she is talking about. And that's like the excitement and that surprise and like, you know, at that moment of like, wow, we actually did it kind of thing. And yeah, and then we actually had a celebration night. At, like, we scheduled our time to have a Zoom celebration. I actually brought a drink from my fridge and to cheers with my teammate virtually. yeah, so that's how we did it. And after that, we were also talking about how we can do our team recording, because they need to announce that like 5 days later. So we needed to keep it secret at the time. So you know that, I don't know, I kind of like that, to having that happiness to ourselves for a couple of days. yeah, that's what I want to mention. Anya, maybe want to jump in on that.
No, I think Liao said it really well. I think we were all surprised. As I said, the other ideas were really good, and they decided that ours was the best, I guess. And I was really surprised with, and really like just honored by the cash prize that we were all given. So the prize was, I think, 20,000 total. And I don't know how other people spent.
17,000, I think.
Yeah.
17,000, yeah. Although it still feels like 20,000 when you were a grad, poor graduate students, you know.
Oh my God, no, it felt like a million. It definitely felt
seriously.
When we presented on like in, I guess in the second week of April or something, so I attended like all the participants' presentation and the question and round also and everything. So somehow like I had a feeling that yeah, we might win this competition now after listening to the judges' comments on different teams.
I was just gonna say I was surprised as well, but something funny I wanted to share. I think it might have been that night even, when we were all getting together for kind of a celebratory Zoom meeting, we were already started to talk like, oh, what should we do with this next? It came together pretty quickly. Like, you know, this is something that after having that immediate validation of these judges, they like this idea too. Maybe we should do something more with this in the future. I think that was interesting.
And speaking of the future, what is the future of your project? What now? Is this the end after you guys won the competition? Or what are the next stages with this? And are you guys considering exploring further? And like, where do you guys stand with this now? Or you haven't decided yet?
I can talk about that. So we are actually proceeding further now that we are participating the iCorps course is called Innovation Corps. It's a program that's under the National Science Foundation. We were encouraged to proceed our next step. We were actually kind of hesitating because we are kind of busy in the summer as well. People have jobs and like gonna go into law school I'm familiar with iCorps and I know what we would be doing in there. It's more about the customer validation, because at the competition, we were have a set that our customer is going to be the nuclear industry. This idea would work, but we are not sure if that will work with our other ecosystem as well, because our idea includes three ecosystems. And I felt like having iCorps is a good kind of like going along, kind of like how do you describe? They have a procedure, how what's your next step? Like you have a scheduled timeline to go visit. So that I encourage my teammates to participate in this class with me. Now we are interviewing more people on top of the 30-ish interviews for the competition to try to validate. And we will also be eligible to apply for more fundings after we complete this course. So we are just really like keep our options open as of right now, because we still have so much more things to figure out. That we are proceeding this further, and we are really excited about it. Like, there are many unknowns, but like we are we are really excited to see what will come next.
Thank you so much for joining us on another Campfire episode. This was a wonderful conversation, and I was so glad I was able to feature this team of remarkable people on the podcast for our Campfire series. And I hope you've enjoyed this. If you did, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a rating or a review. We would love to hear back from you. You can reach us on our Instagram and Twitter pages at The Energy Talk everywhere. And also, you can join us next week for our next episode of the Campfire series, where we go to Nepal to interview a team doing a project there. Special thank you to Michelle from the Energy Impact Center for her help in setting this episode up. And I look forward to seeing you guys next week. Have a lovely day, and thank you so much.